News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning and happy weekend, happy Friday, not a real happy Friday, with some news out of Washington, D.C. President Trump and the First Lady tested positive for coronavirus. He tweeted that out about midnight last night. That's the way we received the news. That's the way the nation received the news.
That's right. And most recent news, Vice President Mike Pence and his wife have tested negative. So we'll discuss the ramifications of the president just 32 days away from the election testing positive for COVID-19 later in the show.
Let's talk a little football right now. It's called Huddle Up with Jason Campbell, the former great quarterback at Auburn University. Jason, how are things with you, and how pumped are you for this weekend?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm enjoying myself. I'm very pumped. Fall come early this year for us. We get a chance to play Georgia early in the season. We're used to playing them in November, so this game has been moved. So it's the first time since 1936 that Auburn, Georgia has played this early in the season, and it's still going to have a lot of big game and ramifications around it. So, it's a college game of the week.
Let's rewind just a moment, and we're one game into the season now. Your impressions of Auburn's win over Kentucky in week one?
Well, anytime you can get a win in week one, especially against a talented team like Kentucky, coming in, a lot of people have picked them to upset us because they was returning so many starters from last year. They had one of the best offensive lines in college football. But at the same time, I thought our guys came out. We were trying to figure our way out in the first half. But I was really impressed with the way they continue to fight and the goal line stand they had right before the half with the interception by McQuarrie. When you think about this football team, we were still trying to figure out our offensive line situation all the way up to the game. We didn't start a left tackle until, they named the left tackle the starter right before the game started. So that goes to show you that they're still trying to piece together, those five guys up front to protect Bo and open up our run game. Now, that's the thing Gus is hanging his hat on, is the fact that we wasn't able to run the ball very successful. We only had 50-some yards rushing, and 30-some of that came from Bo scrambling and everything. So I definitely would think this week, with another week under their belt, that they're going to work on the run game, because I expect teams to double Steph Williams, especially Georgia, that really good secondary, and try to force other players to beat them, because he is an extraordinary player, and Bo has so much trust in him. The way he puts the ball up for him and go and get it. So, those are things I expect this week to happen between the hedges as our run game has got to get going.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you, Jason, with Seth Williams playing just out of his mind. And we saw him moss a couple different guys last week against Kentucky. But from the quarterback perspective, when you have a receiver that's that dominant and obviously your number one option, how difficult is it to spread the ball around? And you mentioned Georgia will probably try to take Seth Williams away. As Nix is back there in the pocket, or in so many cases outside of the pocket, looking down the field, how tough is it for him to come off of Seth Williams when he's playing as well as he is right now?
It's real tough. I noticed last year that Seth Williams became his number one target early, in the Oregon game. And then it's just kind of been just the same way since then. And then you look at the game just last Saturday, the ball he threw on third down in the red zone, he scrambled to his right and threw it back across his body in the air, and Seth went up and got it. That's a ball that you see in the meeting room where the coach is on your head talking about, hey, this is something we can't throw. But with Bo and Seth, I think they allow him to throw those kind of balls because he's one of the best high point receivers we have in college football. He can go up and get the ball, and everyone saw his leap ability. My whole thing is, he's not as fast as Randy Moss or run like Randy Moss, but he can definitely go up and high point. It's like one of the best receivers I've seen go up and do. And that's what separates him against the others. And I think that's why Bo has so much confidence in him, is because the margin for error is so small. You throwing the ball up to this guy, pretty much 7 out of 10 times he's coming down with it.
I won't say the two of them won the Kentucky game, just the two of them, but those two plays were just turned the game around. They were really incredible. Georgia was kind of uneven, very uneven offensively in their first game. Assess what the Bulldogs have with their where their shortcomings are and maybe their strengths.
Yeah, they struggled in the first half against Arkansas big time. You saw that they changed quarterback. They went from DeJuan to the other kid. And now, you know, JT Daniels, the transfer from USC, you know, he was out last week, but this week he's been cleared to play. I know Coach Smart has not come out and said who will start. And we all know why he's doing that. He's trying to make all of them prepare for all three quarterbacks. And that takes extra time and extra preparation. So I definitely expect JT Daniels to start. I probably would say DeJuan would probably get some plays in there as well, because he's an athletic quarterback, and they would probably miss him in there just to try to keep the defense honest. In the run game department, like they said, they had 120-some yards rushing. But, you know, Georgia's a team that likes to run the ball a lot more than that. Kirby Smart, he kind of tailors everything, you know, after what Saban did and does at Alabama, which is play strong defense and be able to run the ball and play action pass. And that's what he's trying to do at Georgia. So I expect our defense last week, who we really struggled on third downs, getting off the field in third downs. I know Coach Steele, you know, it's probably been on those guys all week. Those guys probably been doing up downs until they can't do anymore. Because at one point it was 11 for 15 on third down conversion for Kentucky. And for our point, the thing our defense did really well is they couldn't get off the field on third down, but they didn't give up any touchdowns. You know, you had the early touchdown, but from that standpoint on, they did a really good job of holding them out the end zone. Now, when you get against some of these explosive offense, as you know, you can't be on the field that long defensively, especially when there's not a whole lot of depth, because we had a lot of guys injured last week. Big Cat Bryant out for most of the game with an injury and everything. So we have to get guys back healthy. And having him back this week, I think, adds another dimension to our defense, especially as him setting the edge on the run in the run game.
Jason Campbell, our guest every Friday on FM Talk 106.5. It is Huddle Up with Jason Campbell, the former great Auburn quarterback.
Yeah, and Jason, if JT Daniels is the guy for Georgia tomorrow, he hasn't seen the field since week one last year when he was with USC and suffered that injury. If I'm not mistaken, I think you had a knee injury during your career, and correct me if I'm wrong, but how difficult is it as a quarterback to come back with your mind in the correct place after suffering through something like that?
Yeah, anytime you have an injury, especially the lower part of your leg, as a quarterback, it's always a little nerve-wracking when you get ready to go out to that first game. You're probably a little hesitant to do things. Be honest with you, you really can't wait to take that first hit. Mm. And I think after you take that first hit is when some of those jitters kind of go away. I think he's probably a little bit more, you know, tentative about the knee injury than just throw the game, because it is a huge game. And if you get the start and this is your first game, like, you know, that's tough. You know, you're playing against one of the better teams, a top 10 team, and you're trying to worry about making sure you're led. Because I've heard guys mention this before, like, it's a huge fear to get over because, okay, they're telling you you're healthy, your injury is fine, but until someone comes low and hits you around the hip area and close to that leg, and you're able to drive off of it, that's when it kind of like goes out the way. And I think for him, he'd rather get hit early in the game. And, you know, it's not something you want to hear a quarterback say all the time, but it's the honest truth when you're coming off an injury situation.
And before we wrap it up with Jason Campbell, part of the Auburn broadcast that you'll hear tomorrow on FM Talk 106.5, the game against Georgia. Any impressions? Well, I'm sure you had some. Just give us a few of the impressions you had from week one of the SECs. There were some surprises out there for sure.
Yeah, it definitely was a surprise. That's why I tell people, I say, man, the element of surprise this year in the SEC is going to be outstanding, because it's the first time we've had an all-SEC schedule. But when you look at as the week of all last week, man, like, you know, Mississippi State coming out, you know, everyone wondered, could they aerate the ball in the SEC like you know, Coach Leach did at Washington State? And the answer is, yes, you know, he did it against LSU, a team that, you know, of course, everyone know they lost a lot of players over the summer. Some, you know, opted out, and then you lose your best receiver in Chase, who opted out, and then, you know, your best corner in all of college football is not even playing. So, you know, that does play a factor as well, but let's not take anything away from Mississippi State. You know, they still put up 600 yards passing. They still, you know, played a close game in Baton Rouge and pulled it out. And then you think about Vanderbilt. Like, everyone thought Vanderbilt was just going to get clobbered, and they went out there and they pushed Texas A&M, and I think everyone has high expectations for Texas A&M. I think some of those expectations are kind of lowering down. Like, their number one receiver opted out for the season, and you saw what a big difference it did for them offensively. So I don't think they're one of those top five teams that everyone had going into the season as far as like in the SEC. I think they're tilting down a little bit. But Florida looked outstanding. I thought Florida played really good defense. The quarterback put up Trask. You know, he's looking probably to have a season like Burrow, not maybe numbers-wise, but have that senior outstanding season from the way he opened up against Ole Miss. And Ole Miss is not to be played with either. You know, they really fought those guys, and you can tell Lane Kiffin is going to put up points. So, you know, across the SEC, I just think, you know, as a whole, when I think about this, it's going to be a tougher year. You know, Alabama still looked like Alabama against Missouri. You know, Georgia, like I said, had a strong second half, put up 32-3 against Arkansas in the second half, and then Auburn, you know, rebounded in the second half and did really good against Kentucky. So I expect this thing to be a tough, tough season, and to be whoever stays the healthiest the most and whoever can run the football and protect their quarterback. But this thing is going to come down to depth on this year, because it's going to be football and 2.0. almost for the NFL.
How about that? Between coronavirus and only playing SEC schools, you better have some depth, that's for sure. Jason, where can people follow you and your fans follow you, the fans of Auburn and fans of yours?
Yeah, you can follow me on my Instagram account. It's at jcampbell17. And then you also can follow me on Twitter, which is capital JCAM_17. And then that's pretty much where I do a lot of things, but I also have my Believe in Auburn podcast, BLEAV. You know, go on there and subscribe. My co-host, Taylor Davis, who works with ESPN, she went to Auburn. She's an Auburn graduate, so she does a lot of these sideline games and reporting in the SEC. So, you know, you follow her at Taylor Beth Davis, and she has a lot of reports and everything. So we do a really good job with our podcast show, where we have former players or coaches from now that come on there and give us intel and insight about games and everything. So check us out there, and look forward to hearing from you.
Well, thanks for improving our show. Every Friday, it's Huddle Up with Jason Campbell from the Auburn Network. Have a great weekend, Jason, and be safe up in Athens.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys, and War Eagles.
There you go.
Kickoff tomorrow, Auburn, Georgia, 6:30. Pregame show begins right here on FM Talk 106.5, where you can hear from Jason Campbell at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon.
Excellent. 8:19, back to our number one story, the president, the first lady, and coronavirus on the way on FM Talk 106.5. We came in this morning, and everything kind of turned upside down with what our lead story was, obviously. President Trump's Twitter account revealed, if you were on Twitter last night, that the president and the first lady, Melania Trump, have tested positive for the coronavirus. That was a shocker. In this year of shockers, here comes another one.
Yeah, and it's still the president's most recent tweet that came just before midnight our time last night. He said, "Tonight, the First Lady and I tested positive for COVID-19. We will begin our quarantine and recovery process immediately. We will get through this together." Writing "together" in all caps. And his announcement was confirmed by White House Dr. Sean Conley, who released an official memorandum overnight. And that memorandum read, "This evening I received confirmation that both President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump have tested positive for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. The President and First Lady are both well at this time, and they plan to remain home at the White House during their convalescence." Vice President Mike Pence reacted overnight, writing on Twitter, "Karen and I send our love and prayers to our dear friends, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump." Pence added that he's praying for a full and swift recovery. And recently, just a few minutes ago, the vice president and his wife, Karen, both tested negative for COVID-19. Now, 4 hours before President Trump revealed on Twitter that he and Melania tested positive for the coronavirus, it was announced that a member of his inner circle had contracted COVID-19, Hope Hicks, who, of course, is one of the president's closest advisors. Hicks was present at the debate on Tuesday night in Ohio, and also on Wednesday followed the president to Minnesota for a rally, and leaving from the White House to Joint Base Andrews on Wednesday, she flew in the president's helicopter, Marine One. During that time, she was also in the company of the president's other top advisors, Stephen Miller, Dan Scavino, and Jared Kushner. Hicks said that she started getting symptoms, I guess, on Wednesday, tested positive on Thursday. The president has since canceled today's rally in Sanford, Florida, due to testing positive for the virus. And right now, only one thing on his schedule, that's a closed press call on COVID-19 support to, quote, vulnerable seniors. And Democratic presidential nominee Vice President Joe Biden did react this morning to the report. He tweeted, to the president and said, send our thoughts to President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump for a swift recovery. Added, we will continue to pray for the health and safety of the president and his family.
Earlier this morning, Gordon Deal caught up with reaction from Politico's managing editor, Sudeep Reddy.
It is quite the event. This is a president who had spent much of his year dismissing the virus and downplaying it. And for this to happen with an October surprise fashion a month before Election Day, it is quite the bombshell to come out. It completely transforms the election. It completely transforms how Trump will be seen in his final year of his presidency. And it is already having some implications for financial markets with a pretty sudden dip in the early moments after the word first broke.
Right. So when things first broke, futures were down. What did overseas markets do?
You could tell there was a pretty sharp drop in markets. Markets had not been fully processing the implications of Trump being down in the polls. This seems to have jolted them. It was surprise news. It's not really clear yet whether there's any lasting implication for the president. He appears to be in good spirits. It's not clear yet whether he's got any symptoms, whether he will come out of this just fine or will go and have some of the problems so many other people in their 70s have had with this.
Hmm. High energy guy. That was on display during the debate.
Yeah.
But the news just keeps on coming. It just keeps on rocking down the road with new stuff every day. And this close to the election, you wonder how this is going to affect public sentiment, his campaigning, and obviously his health.
Yeah, 32 days until the election. And I know a lot of people, and you just heard Sudeep Reddy there say that almost an October surprise with the president testing positive. I'm not so sure whether it will hurt him or help him or be no difference in the polls, but we're coming really close to that election day. Now, he mentioned the stocks there during that comment.
Yes.
Dow Jones right now, futures down 440 points with some caution in the market. That's about 1.6%. The Dow Jones futures are down. S&P 500 down by about 1.65%, and the NASDAQ futures down 2.3%. So we'll see a lot of movement in the market today, but if the president, if he abides by CDC protocol, and that's a big if, then he would technically not be allowed back out onto the campaign trail until October the 12th, which, of course, is even closer to the election. And already one rally canceled for tonight in Florida. You have to wonder how much this will hurt the president as we head into that huge election in November.
Or maybe somehow help him. I don't know. It's crazy. 830 FM Talk 106.5. And we've got news, traffic, Dr. Bill's weather all coming up.
Hey, 36 FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on a Friday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, happy Friday, y'all.
Hey, same to you. The first Friday of the new month and the great deals roll on at McConnell. Tell us what we can expect if we come over.
That's right. Y'all been waiting on them. 21 Yukons, and we got 8 in yesterday. So if you want one, you better come by there, because I think they were trying to get rid of two yesterday. They are just beautiful. I think one of them's a four-wheel drive, and one of them's actually a Denali that came in. And everybody's been waiting on them. If you want to see one, just come by there and check us out. And check us out online at McConnellAutomotive.com for your used cars. And if you have any questions, like I said, call Gene or I at 251-476-4141. We're going to be all open tomorrow. We're going to have the football games on, and y'all come by and visit us.
And with the cooler weather, lots of folks thinking about hunting season. I know you have a great selection of new and pre-owned trucks on the lot.
That's right. With the people coming and buying the new four-wheel drive, the X31 and the AT4s, we're getting some good trade-in. So if you need that little hunt camp truck, come see us.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louis Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online at McConnellAutomotive.com.
Dan Brennan, Dalton Ortwig, and there is plenty going on, plenty to talk about today. Of course, the president and the first lady testing positive for COVID-19. That news broke around midnight last night.
Yeah, and so far, and more word hasn't come out on the president's exact condition this morning, but Hope Hicks was at least the first reported to test COVID-19 inside the president's inner circle. That happened yesterday. Her positive test was confirmed, and she had traveled with the president for the debate on Tuesday night and then to Minnesota for a rally on Wednesday. And I think so much of how this will affect the election depends on whether the president begins to show symptoms or gets outwardly ill. At least in a couple of his appearances yesterday, first returning to the White House where he spoke with media, he did not look outwardly ill at that point. Also last night, he was on an interview with Fox News' Sean Hannity, also didn't appear to be showing any symptoms at that point. So, hopefully that continues. And the president being 74 years old, even though, Dan, you've talked about how high energy of a person he is, yeah, he's still right there in that age where people can and have been greatly affected by this virus. His wife, Melania, 50 years old, Hope Hicks, younger, they shouldn't, and I say should not, they shouldn't have awful reactions to the virus, but the president certainly at 74, that has to be kept in mind. So what happens from here on out? And I'd love to hear from you on the text line or phone line, 343-0106. Do you think this hurts the president's chances at re-election for next month? Or we talked about UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson when he tested positive, and he ended up suffering from he ended up in intensive care.
He was pretty compromised. It was like, I don't know, say touch and go might be a little too dramatic, but intensive care is nothing to play with.
Right, but I don't think that his numbers is, as far as elections go, and you
popularity.
Have to, even though you want the president and first lady to recover as soon as possible, you got to keep that in mind. But this does turn political very quickly with the election on the horizon. Will this hurt the president's reelection chances? And what does it mean for the upcoming debates? I mean, we just had that debate on Tuesday night. I think they said it registered at 73.1 million viewers on live TV, and that doesn't count the streaming numbers, so I'm certain that more people watched than just the 73 million. But there's another debate coming up on October 15th, and if the president does abide by the CDC protocols, he, even if he's asymptomatic all the way through, won't be technically allowed to campaign until October the 12th, and I say if he abides by the CDC protocols. I think that's a big if.
You've said that plenty of times. Don't you think his medical staff will make it imperative that he... Or you have your doubts.
I do have my doubts, okay. And that's just because, every time we think the president will do one thing and that he's supposed to do one thing doesn't necessarily mean that he will. And, even though there's been stories written, and I've seen the White House called a petri dish for the disease and things of that nature. The president, they've been looking after him up to this point. He gets tested all the time. They test everyone that's come into contact with him. They sweep the rooms before he goes into any rooms. He's had these outdoor rallies. But the virus is going to virus, and we've said that a million times over the last 8 months. There's only so much you can do in so many different instances.
Let's go to the line and let's talk to David, who's on the line right now. Good morning, David. Happy Friday.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dalton. I have a question for you guys. Serious question.
Sure.
Would either one of your wives like to be quarantined with you for 14 days straight?
They would love it. Both of them. I can speak on behalf of my wife and Dalton. I've known now for well over a month, and he's completely delightful.
So yeah.
I don't see why Mrs. Dalton wouldn't love for Dalton me hanging around the house for 14 days.
She might be actively trying to get me to catch the virus just so that we can hang out more.
So there's your answer, David.
Well, that is true. But one thing that I'm kind of disgusted at the media, not necessarily you guys, but the media in general. When I say that term, I'm using it in general this morning, is that they're already feeding the fantasy land dreams of the uber liberals out there about what happens if the president dies before election day and all this other stuff. And I'm like, he's gotten coronavirus. He's not even showing any symptoms. Let's cool the jets on the succession stories and fantasy land stories, because it's well written in the Constitution what happens if the president's incapable of discharging his duties or, God forbid, dies before the election day.
Yeah, thank you, David. We haven't gone there on FM Talk 106.5. I think Gordon Deal kind of brought it up in this morning, but
it's a question that needs to be asked. You know, but
you know the answer. I don't know. I'd rather not go there this early into all of this.
And other people have gone there very early. And
yeah,
I've seen already online people saying, you know, Nancy Pelosi one step closer to becoming president, and because she, of course, is second in line behind Vice President Mike Pence, who again tested negative for the virus. And I'm already seeing people calling for a delay to the Supreme Court nomination and acceptance of Amy Coney Barrett. Not sure how that changes either.
That's funny, because you said this thing's going to get political real quick, when actually this thing has gotten political real quick, and it's an illness. And Robert is in Pensacola. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. I'd just like to let you know there has been a change in the CDC guidelines, and he can come out of quarantine 10 days from the onset of his symptoms.
Oh.
10 days from the onset of his symptoms.
Wow.
Now, if this is going to affect the election, it might. I don't know. I do know that if the Democrats get elected, we are looking at a socialist country and a socialist government. So if anybody wants to know what socialism is, go to Cuba. And I've been down there multiple times. And we'll all be equal. Houses will be, we won't have to worry about housing. We won't have to worry about health care. We won't have to worry about work, because they're going to sign you a job.
Right. And we will have to worry about when to get in line at the bread line, though, right?
Yes, they and sometimes there will be rationing of food. So it'll be a travesty if Donald Trump is not reelected president of the United States.
You stay well, Robert. Thank you for the call, and be good in Pensacola. We know you got some recovery over there, too, with the storm.
We'll get through it. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is getting Trump reelected.
Robert in Pensacola on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and a lot of people commenting and how they think this might affect the presidential race. We can get to that here in the next break and read your comments from the text line 343-0106. Now, I'm not sure if Biden and Harris are elected how quickly this would turn into a socialist paradise, but I was reading an article earlier this week about the California policies right now and how much effect that might have on the national policies if they were to take office. And there was some frightening stuff in there, but I know a lot of people feel the same way that Robert does.
Yeah, let's talk about that coming up. FM Talk 106.5. It is Dan Brennan. It is Dalton Orwig, and we are Mobile Mornings. And, of course, more great local talk with Jeff Poore beginning at 9 o'clock. And then the master of all things, because he can talk history and he can talk to projecting the future of the city of Mobile and the state of Alabama, Sean Sullivan. A lot of fun. He's up at noon with Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Good morning, or is it a good morning? It's crazy. It's FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, 9 minutes away from 9 o'clock. We're turning up your voice, too. 343-0106. That's also the text line.
Yeah, and we asked, how do you think the news of President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump's positive COVID-19 tests affects the upcoming election? Of course, we say that with wishing, at least I can speak for myself and Dan, I imagine you feel the same, that wishing that the president has a speedy recovery and that no one shows any symptoms or any sickness. But how will this affect the upcoming November election? Now, Democrat presidential nominee Joe Biden will be tested this morning for coronavirus.
Hey, thanks for the update from Red on the text line, who shot us that story. So that's the first I saw that.
And that comes, of course, after Tuesday night when the two debated, albeit very far away from each other. And I would guess that they did not come much closer after the debate either.
They were as close. What the nation saw was as close as those two guys got Tuesday night, would be my guess.
Now, what if, and I just say this as a what if,
okay,
what if Biden also tests positive? If you have both nominees test positive going into the November 3rd election, that just invites all kinds of chaos.
Two men in their 70s, too. So,
yeah. So you've got...
Let's wait for those test results to come back before we go there.
We've got a vice presidential debate coming up October 7th. That's between Vice President Mike Pence, who has tested negative for the virus this morning, and Senator Kamala Harris. They will debate October 7th. But the next presidential debate is supposed to be a town hall-style debate, and it's scheduled for October 15th. We just talked about the CDC protocols, and if Trump does wait the 10 days required by the CDC protocol, then that would put him getting out of the House, the White House, that is, by October 12th, which would be 3 days before that debate. Whether they would push that off, or if the president ends up needing a longer time to recover from this, possibly even canceling that debate, that could be a major issue as well. Some of the texts we've gotten here, this unnamed texter, good morning. President Trump will continue to do better with coronavirus. This will not change people's votes. All of his fans will continue to vote for him. I'm wishing him a speedy recovery. Looking forward to November 3rd. I'm voting for Trump again. I'll say this is an unnamed texter because I don't want to get them in trouble. I said, goodness, my wife is 47 and the president's wife is straight hot, being 50 years old, Melania Trump. Okay.
I left your name out there. I don't know what that has got to do with the election or the virus.
But he said it, and I'm sure some were thinking it. Donnie from Lillian says it will help the president because he and Melania will recover, and it will show strength instead of being frail like Biden. Jace points out something that I noted earlier this morning as well. He said, absolutely predictable to see online. The same people who threw righteous fits about people making inappropriate dark jokes about Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing are the same who are now cheering the president having COVID. And there have certainly been a number of those already on social media. And another one here, mainstream media will twist Trump's coronavirus to the fullest as regards to the polls, etc. Hydroxychloroquine or whatever is working best, hopefully will knock it out. Prayers for a speedy recovery, President Trump.
I think we have Jerry on the line. Is that right? Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, this is Larry.
Larry, okay. Hey, how you doing, Larry?
You know, a word that folks don't use very much anymore because they've sweetened it up a little bit, socialism and communism. You know what the difference is between the two?
Between socialism and communism?
Yeah.
Well, socialists, I guess, would they want, you know, there's a lot of similarities, but why don't you explain it for us?
Basically, it's 16 letters in the alphabet.
That's it?
That's it. And people, they don't use that word very much anymore because socialism doesn't scare people. Communism does.
Right, right.
So they've changed. They've, just like a lot of other words that's ever been used, they sweeten the word up so it doesn't sound as bad as what people knew it to be.
Right. There's a lot of outward socialists out there, but not very many that outright claim communists.
That's exactly. But so whenever you get to the socialist part, then it's only a nickel's turn to get to the communist part.
Larry, thanks for your call.
They're running your life.
We appreciate you calling, Larry. Let's move one down the rung here and talk to Bill. He is in Mobile.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I don't think this is going to change the election so much as, you know, maybe the campaigning. I know Trump, his rallies are very beneficial for his campaign. But, you know, maybe he can put himself on a big screen, and if he's asymptomatic, he can do it from the comfort of the Oval Office or something along those lines. But, you know, the other thing about it, too, is as far as the way people are going to vote, I don't think it's going to change too much because, again, like you played that bit from the this morning with saying that he downplayed the virus, which I know they're using that Bob Woodward piece as kind of the context for that, but I lived through February and March and April in this country, and you know, I think the context of that Woodward discussion was he downplayed it in the sense of not wanting to create a panic,
right.
Which if you look online or if you are out in the street, I think it's well-founded because many people are filled with such anxiety and panic that anything will make them go off. So, you know, I think putting that in context about the downplaying is important.
Yeah, well stated, I think, Bob. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and the president did say that he was trying to avoid creating a panic. And of course, that's also with the markets in mind, and exactly what he said. And we're seeing some of that this morning. You know, there's some panic out there as the markets open. And
yeah,
maybe not as much, that
didn't take long, right?
Maybe not as much panic as uncertainty, but uncertainty is something you really don't want to see in the stock market.
No, and, you don't. The uncertainty is almost the opposite of the silver bullet. You know, uncertainty really, really does rock the stock market. So these are definitely unprecedented, uncertain times. Those are the words we've been talking about. Those are the words and the phrases that have been used since this pandemic began and was in our face beginning in the middle of March. And now for it to ramp up to this point, this close to the election, and now the President of the United States and the First Lady testing positive for COVID-19, I'd have to really look. It hit us like a ton of bricks, and then we were on the air. Mm-hmm. I haven't really had time to digest it, process it, and all that.
Well,
so I have no idea. Maybe I'll have better thoughts when we get around to Monday's show.
And as far as campaigning, you know, any of us, we test positive for coronavirus, we quarantine in our homes. The President tests positive, he quarantines in the White House. A little bit of a difference there. He'll still be tweeting, I presume, even though he hasn't sent a tweet this morning outside of the one that said he and the First Lady have tested positive. But I do wonder, you know, if he's not ill, will he stand outside the White House a far distance away from everyone and continue to speak to the nation?
I see what you're saying. I get it. We'll find out. It's 8:59 at FM Talk 106.5. News straight ahead, and then the Jeff Poor Show.